The following program has been furnished and paid for by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSCB and KGBC are not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us. And once again, let's start off by reminding you that just because you hear us discuss certain tax information strategies, etc., or perhaps a private real estate partnership or two, that you should not run out and jump into the deep end just yet. Check with your advisors, your current advisors, and make sure they agree that what you thought you heard is indeed accurate as to the education that we might have dispensed. For those of you that don't have advisors that discuss real estate private partnerships, perhaps retirement funds and using your retirement funds to invest in such creatures, or you're interested in getting to the zero tax math rate of taxation as you head into retirement, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's beaplanner.com. And if you'll navigate to the forms link, it's right there at the top right of the page, second from the right. Go to the first step one, form one, client profile, complete that. And that'll give us enough to have a chat by phone with you if you would like to. And we can give you some idea of if or how we might be able to assist you with achieving your financial goals and objectives. And, you know, I think I've mentioned it more than a few times before, but it probably is always wise. I should start off every show by indicating who our content is targeted towards. You know, we're dealing typically, the average listener is probably between 55 and maybe 70 and realizes that they are behind on their retirement savings, and they're not quite sure where to turn because they don't have confidence in the stock market to return above average rates of return in an adequate amount to get them what they need to live on in retirement, which is a lot more money these days than it ever has been due to a number of factors, not the least of which is the medical innovations. Wonderful though they may be, they cost money. And there are several ways of dealing with that, and you're going to start to hear us talk even more. We've alluded to it several times about the prospect of living in other locales than America. You know, you might be shocked to learn we don't necessarily have the best health care in America, and we for darn sure don't have the lesser expensive price tags on the health care that we have there. And when you think about what one of your largest expenditures might be in America, it's health. And why not consider living somewhere where the health care is of a higher quality and it's less expensive? And, you know, it's not to say you still wouldn't want to take on Medicare. You probably would. Although the more and more I think about it, where I've chosen to locate here in Thailand, I'm not sure why I signed up for Medicare. I guess I just, you know, it's almost a habit that, you know, if you watch those around you do it, you tend to do it too. But when I look at the only life event I've ever experienced in the healthcare arena, at least as an adult, it was something that would have cost close to $500,000 in the U.S. It cost me somewhere between $13,500 and $14,000. And much higher quality of care. The facilities were at least as good as what I might have experienced in Houston or San Antonio. And it really made me stop and think about, well, should I even sign up for Medicare? If I signed up for Medicare, parts A and B, without getting part, I guess it's G, the Medigap or supplemental policy, I would be on the hook for a deductible that was about, eight times more than I paid without any health care insurance here in Thailand for that event. And I just shake my head. It's like you know, we Americans are so obsessed with all the things that don't really matter in life, you know, the brand, the color, the shape, the whatever, this and that, as opposed to what's simply the best option that gets the job done. And I don't mean to say that it's all good, the things we overlook. I know here in Thailand there's no such thing, not one self-serve gas station in the whole country. And I don't know about you folks, but the older I get, the more I like that. And I wouldn't have to be old to like that. I like that, period. And you say, well, gee, how can they do that? And yet the price of filling up your vehicle is no more than it would be in Houston or San Antonio. Well, it's because the cost of labor and the lack of regulations that overlay that acquisition cost of that. Actually, it's not even the acquisition cost, it's part of the acquisition cost as well of that liter, in this case, of petrol that's delivered to the station. And you know, it's amazing there's not people dying every day from accidents around those gas pumps. And it's just one more thing. It's if it's not EEOC or OSHA or any one of a number of other regulatory issues that we price in to the products and services that are in America, it's just a totally different ball game, and the labor cost is totally different. You know, those workers, and I'm just going to use the gas stations as a example. The daily, the minimum labor, or the prevailing wage, I guess you might call it, at those shops is about $14 a day. A day, not an hour. And it's just, it allows for a much lower cost of living, whether it's health care. You know, the situation that I had, which, by the way, I didn't contract it in Thailand. I contracted it when I visited America for 2.5 months, a couple, almost 3 years ago now. Took it back with me, and, you know, tuberculosis meningitis is what I had. And, you know, it just made me realize if that's one of the worst things that could happen to you. I mean, absent cancer or maybe heart failure, which, you know, they've got heart centers and cancer institutes, etc. here. It's like, you know, it's incredible how, and of course, that's, it may not seem like a lot of money to you and me. To a relatively middle-class Thai person, that would be the same as you and me having a $2 million expenditure or hospital stay. And so, you know, it's we're starting from a different baseline when it comes to cost, and we can say that about almost everything. You know, the cost of living has gone up here in the recent past, and yet when you're starting from a baseline, pretty much any city in America, it's still approximately 40% of what you would spend, maybe less, depending on where you're currently domiciled to live in Thailand. But in any event, you know, there's more than one way to deal with the cost of retirement. And, you know, I've got the lower cost of living. The other argument that I would make, and we talk about this all the time, I know you're sick of hearing about it, but Roth conversions, again, lower your cost. Extend your retirement savings. If any of your retirement funds are still sitting in a pre-tax account, 401, IRA, et cetera, and I know they are because most people's retirement funds are, and that's something that you should start on right away. Don't have to convert them all at once. In fact, it's probably not tax efficient to convert all at once. We should look at doing whatever amount makes sense for you that hopefully keeps you within the 22 to 24% tax brackets on the current Internal Revenue Code. And if we can do that, I would say that's a pretty fair exchange for you to not to have to worry about paying tax on the income that comes out of the investments, including real estate private partnerships that you hold within those Roth accounts, be it an IRA or 401. And there are significant differences between those two options, i.e. the IRA versus the 401. And if we have time today, perhaps we can spend a few minutes talking about some of those differences. But that's also something you could fill out our input form at baplanner.com, the forms link, and suggest as a topic we speak about on the phone after we get your form. And, you know, we can give you some idea of how fast a plan you might want to work on to get those funds converted over. And it's not all of the funds in your retirement accounts. We want to take advantage of your standard deduction over the years that still remain to mitigate some of the tax that you would otherwise pay. So in any event, let's go ahead and take our first break. We're right on top of that time spot. And we'll circle back here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, Do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at beaplanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And right before we took a break, I was talking about the use of Roth IRAs and Roth self-directed 401 trust, as we call them. It's the same creature is the solo K, in case you've heard that term. That's the marketing term that's quite common in the IRA custodial world, even though there's no reference to that label in the Internal Revenue Code, as there is trust created pursuant to Section 401. But in any event, one of the big distinctions that you need to be aware of, and this may be a shocker for those of you that haven't heard me say this on the air before. I have, may not have meant anything to you at the time if you weren't focused on possibly undertaking a Roth. But one of the significant, or what can be significant benefits of the Roth style solo K, or I shouldn't say style, it's think of it as a duplex. When you adopt a self-directed 401 trust, most document creation services will allow the person ordering the documents to indicate some of the bells and whistles that they would like to see included in that plan. And in fact, the plan is one typically, I'm pretty sure most all the custodial firms that offer solo K documents have the IRS and Department of Labor predetermined prototype plan documents. So they're not starting from scratch, but there is some differentiation between the different flavors of prototypes that have been given the green light by both Department of Labor, which Department of Labor, DOL, is who's charged with administering the ERISA statute, which is a statute under which 401 plans originate and are administered. In any event, so the prototype plans have different flavors, and the type that we use, we always specify that we want the Roth component in that plan because of the significant benefits to having the Roth option built in to the plan. So think of it as a duplex on the type of document that we utilize, and it's got the ability for you to use either, or to make a contribution or a rollover to the standard pre-tax side of the 401, and then undertake the conversion to Roth with an in-service or an in-plan rather transfer, and so it's very easy, very efficient. You don't even have to tell the syndicator necessarily. You don't have to ask permissions, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So you know, it's nice to have that option in the plan already there, where you're not having to go get an amendment done, etc. So in any event, something to think about for certain if you're looking to undertake the world of Roth. And of course, there's certain qualifications you have to have to undertake or adopt a solo K or 401 trust, self-directed. Feel free to connect with me. I'll be happy to give you more information, but that is the preferred. There's no other vehicle for investing in real estate private partnerships, whether your money's sitting in a money market account or whether it's sitting in a retirement plan. There is no better vehicle to invest with than a self-directed 401 trust. It is the only vehicle that's not subject to some form of taxation. And you might say, well, gee, I thought Roths were not taxable. Well, the Roth is not taxable in the 401 scenario or context. It is if it's an IRA, and it's not taxable with income tax. It's taxable due to the unrelated business taxable income that results anytime you have leverage that's been used. In this case, we're discussing real estate private partnerships. So if you invest your IRA in a real estate private partnership that has debt, which if you don't, you got other problems. You're not going to make much money without leverage. But if you do invest in that type with your IRA, then you've got to deal with the annual unrelated business income tax issue. And there's ways we have to try to steer around that, but it's, you know, it's very much a serpentine exercise, as I've discussed on other shows. It reminds me of the movie In-Laws. I think about the Peter Falk and Alan Arkin out on the tarmac in the South American dictator's country. And it's a cute movie. You need to get a look at it if you don't know what serpentining is. I'm not going to spoil it for you. But in any event, there are ways to mitigate the UBIT or UBTI. It's the same tax. It's just different acronyms are used to describe it. But you got to keep investing. It's something where you're trying to offset the current year tax with maybe a new syndication investment in the current year that creates losses that can be applied against those gains, you know, the passive income. And it goes past what we can easily talk about on the air. But again, if you've got issues, if you don't understand that a Roth account in the IRA context can be taxable with real estate investments, you need to talk to someone. Either hopefully your CPA understands the rule, maybe he's just not aware that you have the ownership. But you'd be surprised how many people, including CPAs, don't understand that the Roth is subject to the UBIT tax. And again, UBIT is short for unrelated business income tax, or UBTI is unrelated business taxable income. It's the same issue. I'm not sure where the two different acronyms got started, but definitely something you would like to avoid. It's one of the reasons you invest with your retirement funds to begin with, is that you don't want to pay tax until later, whether that's later when you convert to Roth, you're going to pay the one-time tax to convert, or whether it's over the years hopefully many years to you, successful retirement. But that's an income that you should avoid, or an income tax that you should avoid. Speaking of Roth conversions, I was just looking at a PPM, a private placement memorandum, up here on my screen, and it always reminds me to take a look at what the risk factors might be. The risk factors you might start to look at in a whole new light after this discussion. You know, there's a big difference when you convert to Roth and your money is in the market, let's say. Let's say it's traded. You've got liquidity. You may have some voting interest. You obviously won't have majority vote, but you've got some. You can, when I say you've got liquidity, I don't mean, yeah, you've got a way to sell it. I mean, yes, I do, but that's just part of it. You actually have the option to sell it when you want to, versus most of these partnerships, you don't have the ability to decide when you want to sell your interest in that partnership. That happens at the partnership level. And in many cases, it's not the partner's decision. It's the lead partner or syndicator who gets to make that call. And so that's a big discount to fair market value when you go to do these valuations. And essentially, or you do these conversions, essentially the way you determine how much tax to pay, whether you're doing it and it's sitting at Charles Schwab today, or whether you're doing it and it's sitting in the John Doe self-directed 401 trust, is you have to come up with a measure of fair market value that we then apply a tax rate to. And it would be the tax that an individual would pay, assuming you took a distribution, took funds, and added that with your other taxable income, if you were still getting a salary, or maybe you've got some annuities that are paying you, or, you know, stocks and bonds, things like that. And, of course, your taxability of your real estate partnerships, assuming they're in the time of life where they're producing taxable income. Most real estate partnerships that I've worked with over the years, not all, but if I just had to draw a circle around the majority of them, they really don't put out much taxable income. Cash flow now is different than taxable income. I'm talking about, you know, you've got a tax return. The top line is gross revenues or income from real estate, which would actually be a net number. But suffice it to say, we're going to start at the top, work our way to the bottom, claiming certain deductions, and it's what's on the bottom that matters. Now, in between, you've got a lot of takeouts or deductions. And again, cash flow is different. Depreciation, as an example, is a non-cash deduction. So you could have a loss for the year without actually having to write the check for depreciation. So what does that create? It possibly creates some cash so that you've got a positive cash flow, even though you may have a negative on the income line. And therefore, assuming the partners agree, or the lead partner, if it's like more and more of these partnerships where all the decision making is left up to the lead partner, unfortunately, you may get part of that cash flow as a distribution. And, you know, it's interesting how most people that I've seen that join the local real estate investor mentor groups, they don't understand how partnerships work. They most likely have never been a member or a partner in a partnership or member in an LLC, which for the purposes of this discussion, we're going to say is the same thing. LLCs can be taxed as partnerships. Probably most of them are. They could also be taxed as S-corps, C-corps. Some could be taxed just on a Schedule C, sole member. And so, anyway, the concept of having taxable income versus cash flow, you just want to remember cash flow is the good stuff. The taxable income is the stuff you got to pay taxes on, even if you didn't get distributions to cover the tax. Think about that. That's one that really grabs the novice, the newbie, by surprise. Is that, well, wait a minute, why am I reporting income? I didn't get any of that income. Well, it doesn't matter. You're part of the partnership, and the partnership got it and may have used most of it to pay down debt. They had, you know, loan payments due, or they could have used it on other ops or other items that didn't create a deduction. I'm going to use debt just because that's the easiest to describe. And so, you know, it helps to understand, and I'll tell you, having dealt with the lead partners, consulted with lead partners, drafted partnership operating agreements, et cetera, very few lead partners truly understand the concepts we're speaking of. And I don't blame or fault the lead partners. They've got so much on their plate already. I guess I can give them a pass on that, but that doesn't mean you don't need to know. You very much need to know what's going on with partnership taxation, or you'll be in for some surprises as you get towards the end of the partnership. So the concept of cash flow is critical in that everything else in that partnership, I mean, you can say, well, you know, we just don't want to lose money. Well, no, that's not true. You want to get cash flow. Having a loss on a K-1, which you're going to have, you're going to get your K-1 the first year, and maybe you put $100,000 into a transaction. That was your capital contribution. And you might have a $85,000 loss. You might have $102,000 loss. That depends on the partnership, depends on the debt. It depends on a lot of things that you won't have control over. And so you don't freak out. You just remember that, net income does not necessarily mean cash flow. And once you have been through a few partnerships, your blood pressure won't go up as much. When you see that first year K-1, you'll understand that, hey, this is all going to come back. It's like you're borrowing deductions for the moment that will all be restored, or most will be restored, if not all, to your capital account later by you recognizing income. At least when you sell the property, you should be recognizing some income, and maybe you won't have gotten the benefit of the deductions yet, in which case that carry forward will offset that. But bottom line is, it's think of it as a pie that's got to come back to 100% at the end of the day. Let's go ahead and take our final break, and we'll circle back here momentarily and wrap up with this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it?
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross. And before I get started on the last segment here, I wanted to just remind you that our next show is on Sunday at 7 a.m. With it's our Be A Planner Cyber version. And we'll have our special guest as usual. I guess he's not so special anymore, but we do enjoy having Mr. A.I. Nguyen, who is a somewhat of a cyber expert and AI studier. He studies it. He uses it. It's pretty impressive, some of the stuff he can do. And I say that he can do with the aid of various of the AI tools that he uses. But in any event, we will be on Sunday, AM 700, right here on the same station, KSEV. I wanted to find, there was an article that I think had some good data in it that I wanted to go over. It's timely due to the OBBBA, the recent tax bill, and effectively it's an article that the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, CRFB.org, sent out this week. Let's see, when did I get this? A couple days ago. And it shows, using August baselines, it shows going out through fiscal year 2035 and assumes that all current tariffs and trade deals remain in effect. And think about some of these numbers. I mean, this is, it's not necessarily a great picture, but it's also just one group's opinion. You have to understand the CRFB, while they claim to be bipartisan, They're no friend of Donald Trump's, that's for sure, at least based on some of their prior math metrics that they put out. But debt held by the public will rise from the current, we're about 100% of GDP, gross domestic product, and it'll go up 20% to 120% over the next 10 years. That's not good. That's a shocking increase. Deficits will total $22.7 trillion over a decade. And it's about 6.1% of GDP, just those deficits. And it will rise from $1.7 trillion, 5.6% of GDP in 2025, to $2.6 trillion, or 5.9% of GDP in 2035. That's a healthy chunk of GDP. Net, and this is a killer, this next metric. Net interest payments on the national debt will total $14 trillion. It's 3.8%. of GDP, rising from nearly $1 trillion in 2025 to $1.8 trillion, or 4.1% of GDP in 2035. So interest on the debt will total $14 trillion over the next 10 years. Huge amount of money. Spending will total $88 trillion over, that's 23% of GDP, it'll total $88 trillion over a decade, while revenue will total more than $65 trillion. Now, again, listen to the numbers. Spending will total $88 trillion. Revenue will total more than 65. Does that sound a bit odd to you? Shouldn't we have more revenue than we have in spending? That's therein lies the problem. And these numbers, you know, I'm not sure they're going to be anywhere near this high, because you know why? Because we're running out of the budget, the discretionary portion of the budget. We are very close to have expending, I guess is the proper word. We won't have it to spend without something being done. And I don't know, you know, the something is still an issue that Congress will no doubt come up with some magical solution that won't be sound fiscal policy, no doubt, but in any event, total deficits are about $1 trillion higher than in the CBO's, that's the Congressional Budget Office's, January baseline. That's January of this year, and it's the between now and 2035, they've already gone up $1 trillion higher than what the projection had been just 8 months ago now, or a little over 8 months. With the debt to GDP raising by an extra 2 percentage points, as the high cost of the OBBA is partially offset by new tariffs and other reforms over the first 5 years, and mostly offset in the next five. So thank goodness we've got at least that revenue that's effectively new revenue for us. Under an alternative scenario, the CRFB, August 2025 alternative scenario, this is on their website, where the U.S. trade court's ruling that much of the tariffs are illegal if it's upheld. There is, I believe it's being appealed, but the U.S. Trade Court has ruled that some of the tariffs violate existing rules and laws. But assuming that the trade court's ruling of those tariffs being illegal is upheld, temporary provisions of OBBBA are made permanent and yields on Treasury securities remain at their current level, debt will reach 134% of GDP. The total 10-year deficit will exceed $28 trillion just in 10 years. You know, that's not far off from where we're at now, cumulatively over how many years? I don't even know. It's been a lot of years it took us to get to 37. Of course, most of that we got to since the year 2000. But by 2035, let's see here. By 2035, the net interest payments will total $2.2 trillion, about 5% of GDP. Now, that's assuming the ruling is upheld as being illegal. So I'm not sure what the likelihood of that is. Importantly, the CRFB adjusted August 2025 baseline does not incorporate the dynamic effects of the OBBBA nor other changes to the economy. Absent a new baseline from CBO, CRFB will update this baseline later in the year to account for these effects as well as new policies and estimates. So, in any event, it's a mess. I mean, that's the bottom line, folks, is it's a mess. And the train isn't just far in the distance coming down the track. It's barreling down the track, and it's getting increasingly close. 2028, 2029, 2030, the train will have pulled into the station. And we're going to be, you know, if people are all upset and distraught over some of the funding that's been cut, that's a picnic compared to what's going to happen when we run out of the discretionary portion of the federal budget and we can no longer pay 100% of the interest on our debt. And you know, our ability to print money will be not just seriously challenged, it'll be diminished significantly. So, anyway. Well, let's go back to the Roth conversion for a moment. Now that we've painted such a delightful picture of the go-forward, what do you think the most likely occurrence is to help mitigate some of this budgetary crisis? I mean, if you had to pick, I know none of us like to pay taxes, but if you've heard me say it before or haven't heard me, excuse me, I'm going to say it again. The current tax rates, tax brackets, are effectively the lowest they've been in most of our lifetime. Okay, so what does that say? Does that say maybe now it may be time to raise rates finally and get rates back up? Not where they were back in the 50s or 40s, but maybe a bit over, well, maybe at least 100 to 150%. Of where they're at right now, because it's only a measure that extreme that's going to turn the train around. And, you know, you look at the relative speed at which the deficits increase just based on the data I was mentioning from the CRFB study, and you know, the big issue as I see it, I mean, I think it's easy for us to do math here and say, well, we got to raise taxes this much or that much. But no, it's a more systemic change. It's not just raising taxes. It's using the money that we raise to pay down the debt instead of putting it into more spending that doesn't do anything to reduce the deficit. That's how we got in this position in the first place. We spent money that we had and a bunch of money we didn't have. And now the chickens are coming home to roost, and we are not prepared to handle the onslaught. And I would tell you that, you know, in and of ourselves, each of us has limited control over what's coming. The one area that you can control is how much of your retirement savings is not going into your pocket. It's going to the government. You know, when people think about how much money they have in the retirement account, they don't ever really think about how much those RMDs are, or the other withholding tax that will occur when they start slipping money out of the 401 or the IRA and putting it into their bank account. And it's going to be significant, and it's going to reduce the amount of money that you have to live on for the rest of your life, which, again, as we mentioned earlier in the show, our life expectancies have gone up. You know, the average male now, according to the IRS's life expectancy tables, will live to a 85 or 86-year-old lifespan, and then females 87 to 88. So, you know, you think about what that translates to, just your basic costs. I'm not talking about aspirational spending, you know, taking the grandchildren to Disney World occasionally and doing things of that nature, maybe traveling. And again, you know, there are options to deal with some of the major costs you incur in your life. It's just the older we get, the harder it is for some of those changes to be implemented. But for those of you that might be interested in relocating to other parts of the world, let me know. I'm personally heavily invested in understanding those rules and be happy to help you. Well, we're at the end of the show. Again, we'll be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on KSEV, and we hope you can join us. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.